I hope you enjoy the great artistic work I did on that handout. Lots and lots of effort went into it, of course.
Like a horse, yeah.
Okay, welcome to this class on disobedience or disability, discerning the difference. We talked a lot about, yesterday we attempted to talk about discerning the difference between a disability or disobedience. And I told a story about my first year and one of the students that I had who was very, very difficult to work with. And essentially we ended up just feeling like we couldn't help him. Not exactly sure what his problem was, but it had lots and lots of behavioral problems. The school board felt like I just needed to be stricter with my discipline, give him more spankings, and that would fix his problems. It really didn't seem to fix his problem. And kind of think that he maybe suffered from something like fetal alcohol syndrome or something like that. However, there's quite a number of people who are knowledgeable and really care about him who thought that he was perhaps demon-possessed because some of the situation in his family and different things like that. Okay, so we talked about what disobedience looks like, and it's basically that list you have there, and there's lots of other things too that you could mention, and we talked about some things that might be symptoms of a disability, and talked too about how they overlap. When you have the second list, you will typically have the first list too, kind of stacked on top of that. There's one more chair up here if you want. Oh, you're just counting. Never mind. One of the things that we didn't talk about is that it's really, really common. I should have mentioned it. And this is common with many different types of disturbances. And that is overstimulation. What do you think of, or what does that mean when we say over? This child is overstimulated. Anybody have any explanation? Or maybe it's a term you haven't heard.
That's fine too. One or their senses are like on overdrive.
Okay. Yeah. So you say one. So there can be different degrees of it, and in the worst case scenarios, it's like all their senses are just on all the time. So just think about this for just a little bit and then we'll open discussion here. So If you think about right now, all the things that you can see, all the colors, everybody's color of clothing and all the colors around and the bright colors in the bookcase and all the colors just everywhere, just glaring. They would just be glaring at you. And then also, maybe close your eyes and cut that out. Well, no, that doesn't work. You can't do that. You have to think about the colors. And then think about all the sounds that you're hearing. Now, you're all being way too quiet. But if you think about all the sounds, and you can hear somebody clicking their pen and rustling nervously, wondering how long this is lasting because we're sitting kind of close together, and somebody's rustling their chair, and there's just noises. And maybe you can hear the train going through, too, sometimes, and you hear the sound on the playground, and you've got all those things. But here's the thing, most of the time, as adults, you can actually forget about that and focus, right? You can actually learn to focus on that. Oh, and, what about smells too? Maybe if you have a very sensitive, you have a very sensitive nose. Which I actually don't. Which is actually good sometimes. But you smell these things and you know somebody here. Well, just saying, somebody. Never mind. Just lots of smell. Lots of smell. Maybe something from the kitchen that was they cooked something in lots of oil or whatever. Okay. But the thing is, you've got all those smells going on, and sounds going on, and colors going on, and yet, you're still pretty much able to focus. right? If you for certain children, they're actually not. It's that it's just right there. It's just there's just lots of, and they can't tune it out. And so when they're fidgeting and they're nervous and they can't look you in the eye and they just don't want to hold eye contact or things like that and they can't hold still, sometimes that's a sign of what we're talking about here, where their circuits are actually constantly on. If I had thought about it, I would talk about how your eye, you know, you don't actually see everything that's in front of your eye all the time. And because it would give your brain overload if you did. If it would send in all those pictures all the time to your brain, your brain would just fry, just like scrambled eggs, and you'd be dead in no time at all because of all those images. So it's a little bit like that, too. Jonah, do you have a problem? Okay, that's good. So, what are your questions here about this? Do you have a situation or any comments about any of the things that we discussed or whatever? Yes?
So pretty much what I'm hearing is that our brain is largely the leading device. Like, it's so cool. Everything that's coming in from our senses that it's mostly just deleting and selecting what it wants to keep. And so someone who's struggling with that is that their backspace doesn't work, essentially, right?
Yeah.
So should we try to teach them to learn to tune out things? Mm-hmm. Or how would you go about that? I don't know.
Yeah. That's a really good way of putting it. I haven't heard of our brains being a deleting device before, but that explains so much for me. Yeah, that's really good. What do you think about that? How can we help people to focus? Can we help our students to just focus?
Is it possible to eliminate the various colors, like as in having a special facility or something where there's everything's the same color in the room and there's as much noise deleted as possible, like, to actually get rid of all of that other information, at least somewhat, to get them started? Is that any sort of, does that value to that idea?
Would have been a white room. Actually, I have definitely heard of that being done. Yes?
Well, I'm going to, just right off the top of my head, I'm going to go with no, because what happens when they go out of that room?
Exactly.
No, it's wow.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So, if you're asking what I was saying, I've heard of that being done for extreme cases. Like, you go to a certain type of institution, they're going to put you in a white room, is what I understand, for certain things. So, is it a good idea for your schoolroom? Is that what you're asking?
No.
That's a little different. Please. Yeah. Unless you're like Calvin and Hobbes and your dad tells you the world used to be in black and white a little bit. Yeah. Which he sort of believed. Okay, good question. Any other questions? Or what are your other questions? I wanted to talk, too, a little bit about what can we do if we have students, like if we expect that we're going to have students who have some of these problems, too. We also didn't talk, I know what it was, yesterday we ended kind of talking about ODD, okay? Can anybody tell me what ODD is? Yes?
Oppositional defiance disorder.
It's also the dog from Garfield, according to Jonah, or something like that. So if you Google disobedience, for example, what you come up with is ODD, which I thought was interesting. It's possible it's a real thing. I'm not sure. But everything I could find about it, it looks like disobedience. It just looks like they're just, I was full of ODD. It makes perfect sense. Oppositional, I don't want to be told what to do. And so all those years I didn't know. I was just struggling from this COVID. So,
there's no known cure.
No known cure, yeah.
I noticed you used the past tense. I was
pretty much in the past. You know, the thing that actually I think about is, how many of you have ever read the book The Man That Listens to Horses. Okay, just a few of you. You should read it. If you're teaching school, even though your children are not horses, he talks about horse psychology. What do you call it? Horse psychology? And it very closely related to human psychology in some things, in that one of the ones is that if you push on a horse, if you go up to a horse and just push on it, what does a horse do? They push back. And it's, he said, the way he defined it is that horses are into pressure creatures. Okay? Now, if you're taught school and you wanted to get something done sometimes, did you ever do the opposite thing or tell your students to do the opposite thing and see what they would do? No, you shouldn't do that. But it does, it actually does kind of sort of work sometimes if you pretend you don't want to do this and see how many of them also do. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So people can be into pressure, or I think people are also into pressure people, creatures, I guess. So if you push on them, they just tend to push back, right? Not literally, of course, but figuratively. Okay, and also, we understand that probably all of us suffer from ADAM, which, you know, the disease that we were all born with. This is not a disability, it's a disease, I guess. Fallen man syndrome. Mm-hmm. So if we think about our students and we're trying to decide, do they have a disability or are they just being disobedient? Go back to that. How do we relate to them? One of the things I would say, just kind of recapping here a little bit too, it's not wise to jump quickly to a conclusion. If it looks like disobedience, treat it like disobedience, at least at the beginning, right? It's pretty safe to do that. It's only after this thing has been going on for a while and it's not seeming to work that you maybe could think about whether it's something else. Yeah, that sounds a little callous in the way I worded that, but I hope you get the idea that, you know, not everything is a disability. Does that make sense? Sort of. Okay. And then look at those maxims I wrote down too. There must always be consequence or punishment for disobedience. And this is what child psychologists say basically across the board. Okay, even if they disagree on what the consequence or punishment should be. They say, if there's disobedience, there needs to be a consequence for it, right? Now, educators, Christian parenting experts and people who think they're experts say, spare the rod and spoil the child. Spare the rod and spoil the child. Boy, did I get tired of hearing that when I was a child growing up and that was preached. My parents already knew that. Encouragement. I will say, too, like many things in Scripture, the rod is not necessarily always literal. It's not the only punishment. In fact, I think it should be the one that's used the least. But it should be used at times. The least, of course, you could take that out of context as well. But a quote from a child psychologist that I thought was valuable, he said, we are doing our children a disservice not to give them consequences for misbehavior, whatever they are, no matter what they struggle with. If we teach them there are no consequences for misbehavior and acting up, we're not helping them out. One of the things that I thought was very helpful, and this has been something I've had to learn too, is some students who simply don't respond well, possibly because of overstimulation or whatever, to maybe traditional forms of punishment. If the consequence is that they have to make restitution for misbehaving, that can be really helpful for them. Any experience with that? Anybody have? Jonah, have you used that method or done that.
So, so we do with one of my younger brothers. Mm-hmm. He's severely autistic and quite regular to completely lose his temper and throw his things and so on. And one of our remedial things is for him to go pick up what he threw and put things back. And he's a very lovable little guy. And there are times when he's so out of control that the only way to control him is physically to hold him mm-hmm. down. And we will do that, and we'll ask him, you know, are you done? Are you ready to say you're sorry? Mm-hmm. And he won't. Even in his limited intellect, he will not give up until he's literally ready to get up and say mm-hmm. sorry. There's something extremely powerful in that mm-hmm. that even a very slow mind can get.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, thank you. Any other examples or comments? Another thing that I've heard of parents doing is, and this is again something that psychologists recommend instead of corporal punishment, is the child will have to say that he's sorry, like Jonah said, and then also come up with his own consequence. You know, to me that sounds like a great idea for, you know, when I was young. I would. But it has to be something that the parents also agree on. Mm. And usually it's a service. So if I was rude to my mom, which actually did happen once, and maybe the one time I remember, I was old enough to know better, and I was rude to mom, and it's not a good thing. Sorry, mom. She's not listening. But if I would say I was rude to mom, and I would have to say I'm sorry, and then I would have to do a job for mom that she usually did. So she liked to weed the garden. She liked to weed her own garden, believe it or not. Actually, I'm not that sure if that's true, but she did weed her own garden. Anyway, and I would weed her garden for her. And I'm making restitution. And it takes me a while to do that. It takes longer than a spanking does. And it actually makes me think longer. And it helps to retrain my brain. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. That type of consequence can be much more effective than corporal punishment. And it helps to retrain your brain. Okay? Also, as we think about... look at the second point here quickly. Being fair is not the same thing as being equal. This is kind of one of the points we ended on here. A teacher who told his students at the beginning of the year that we're going to try to be fair, and we're not going to... being fair is not the same thing as being equal, and we want to... So we want to be fair to everybody this year, and I will decide what's fair. Okay? And normally, your students are able to understand that. They understand that being fair is not the same thing as being equal. Or being equal is not the same thing as being fair. And there was another point I had on that thing. Essentially, it's whenever we're dealing with a flare-up or something like that, a big thing that we need to remember is to keep your cool. Just mm-hmm. stay calm. Just do not get mad and overreact, because it just always makes things worse. Okay. Any other questions about this or anything?
Talking about using a time-consuming punishment as opposed to corporal punishment, is that for a disability situation or across the board?
Well, specifically, I'm talking about using it for certain disabilities. It seems to be much more effective. But try it with, across the board, too.
I wasn't sure on the context.
Yeah. That was my intent, is for specifically for disabilities. Okay. And we were getting to the point where we're talking about, you know, working with the parents on a situation. So what do you do if maybe you feel like the parents are part of the problem. Never had any experience with this, possibly.
I'd say taking into consideration the fact that you only have one brain and one set of eyes, there are people that have probably known them a lot longer than you have, especially if you're out of your own community. Mm-hmm. Keep that in mind.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I would second that. I think I'd begin to question myself. Mm-hmm. Parents are, yeah, disagree with me. Mm-hmm.
It's pretty presumptuous for a 19-year-old teacher to, after working with a student for 2 months, to come and tell parents that have worked with a child for 10 years how they're parenting incorrectly, right? Mm-hmm. So, really good. That's a very good basis. But what if you have worked with a child, or a student, the teachers have worked with a child for years, and the school board thinks that actually what you need to do is this, and parents think differently? What do you do then? Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, so in public schools, for example, the state of California is making laws like this for students with gender dysphoria, they call mm-hmm. it. And that they're putting laws, essentially, they can hide stuff from the parents. Mm-hmm. And that's, to me, anytime you push the parents off to the side, it's a recipe for disaster. Mm-hmm. Even though the parents might be a little off, I could be wrong, mm-hmm. I just don't see how that's mm-hmm. anytime.
I was just going to say something very similar. In a situation like that where it is the school staff versus the parents, mm-hmm. I would say that before doing anything that can make things worse, which is pretty much doing anything, mm-hmm. Get a mediator and get everybody on the same page. I have assisted in some situations that was the main problem.
So by getting a mediator, so let me go talk to Thane here and tell him my problem, and he can talk to, Jeremy, and I can get them on my, is that what you're talking about?
What I'm talking about is someone who can who understands you and understands the parents, mm-hmm. and who can bring you together, not okay. somebody who's going to take sides with you and say, Jonathan, I know you're right because I've been your friend for 20 years, and that parent is, we're going to have to fix them. Mm-hmm. That is not what I'm talking about, but rather a mediator, someone who brings two together mm-hmm. in the best interest of the child in this okay. case.
So, but the parents are wrong. Their parenting methods are just too harsh. They punish too quickly, or maybe they're too soft. They're wrong. What do you do then?
They have to want to learn or change. You can't teach a student who doesn't want to learn. Mm-hmm. Neither can you teach parents who don't want to learn. But if, in my experience, I was in stuff between the school board and parents on a situation, and what it seemed like is we kind of went around and around and around, and one day, Daddy and I sat down for a whole afternoon to talk, and he really wanted to know what I had to say about that, mm-hmm. and I was able to tell him. But it wasn't until he's genuinely seeking what were people saying mm-hmm. that he wasn't hearing, mm-hmm. because it was hard to communicate because of the a church brother to a church brother is hard. That's hard mm-hmm. to mm-hmm. tell somebody what I think you're doing wrong, especially if you maybe don't want to know. Mm-hmm.
If it's easy, then it's probably shouldn't tell them is what the old saying is. Okay, you guys are saying exactly the right thing. Sometimes we get in a place where we care about it. I know that was wrong. Yeah. We get in a place where we're sure that what is being done with this child is actually wrong. It's not helpful for the child. Okay? And we want to fix it. I know if I could just have a free hand, I could fix it. Right? Maybe you've never been in that situation. But at the end of your time with this child, they're going to go home to their parents, and the parents are responsible. In the end, they're responsible. Mm-hmm. You know what? It is, you do so much damage if you do not understand that. So you mentioned that something about the state of California. Understand that in public school, who do the children belong to, basically? In the state? Yeah. The children belong to the state. We don't actually believe that. We believe that the children belong to the parents. We are to serve the parents, and if we alienate the children from their parents, we have destroyed any good that we could have done.
Amen.
Okay, so whatever happens, we cannot do that, right? Hope that's clear. Okay, any other comments on that?
I keep remembering what Brother Jones shared at Shepherd's Staff this winter. One thing he said very loudly and clearly was, your authority comes from the parents. Mm-hmm. And as soon as you disregard that, mm-hmm. you suddenly have lost your authority.
Yeah.
Working into it slowly, in my situation, this will be my third year teaching us a certain student, and dropping hints the first year, it didn't go over, mm-hmm. of what I thought would be the best for some students. By the end of the second year, they were on board. Mm-hmm. And I dropped hints, and then I'd leave it, and I'd walk away for a couple months, come back, hey, what do you think? And now it becomes their idea. And now this coming year, we have completely changed how we're teaching them, and it's going to work very well.
Good.
So,
that's great.
Take it slowly. Yeah.
But
what about a situation where the child leaves with homework and comes back to school with it undone, saying they don't have time, and you talk to the parents about it, and they kind of feel like, we're not doing this homework thing. Do you continue working with the parents, or do you punish the child for not getting homework done?
Okay, and this is something that's constantly happening or happened once in a while?
Constantly.
Pretty constantly. Mm-hmm. What about the other students in their grade? They have lots of homework too? And
it can tend to be this one student mm-hmm. that is a little slower. With
okay. Comments on that, what do you think? Good question.
I've had one girl that, a bit slower, so I really tried to just individually cut down, for reading, I'll cut out this part for you. And I think she does have she has some disability in reading comprehension, some of that stuff, and she has gone through some Martin to help remediate that. But I think I don't think it has to be this big singling out thing, but if you're just more on a one-on-one thing with them saying, here, we can cut out this part, this page, this part. I've done some of that when I've seen that, she had homework the last 3 days and really likes to mm-hmm. help her not have homework today. Mm-hmm. And just kind of always be checking in to see how it's going. I would say for this particular student, she does stick at it. It's just much slower pace than anyone else in her grade. Mm-hmm. So I think just a constant watchfulness and forethought now that's
going.
And communication with parents, I think that's a big thing. For me, they're fine with homework. They would like it not to have to be every day, but they're fine if it has to be that way. So it does raise a question of if they're not supportive.
Mm-hmm. Sure. I'd say utilize the school board as much as possible if you get a situation like that.
Okay, so get the school board involved.
Get them to go do that.
I have a tiny little bit different mm-hmm. take on this, and that is, the school board is a great tool when you have a big problem to fix. I think Jonathan Erb has mentioned it's like using your, calling the fire department, right? You got a fire, let's come in, hose everything down. But you've got a mess to clean up after you call the fire department. Honestly, it can be that way. I remember my first year teaching, I asked the school board what I should do about a student who's getting some F's. And, I don't know, what would you do? I mean, and they kind of kicked it around a little bit. And, well, they didn't really know. I mean, I guess we could fail him, or, you know, what do we do? And almost the next morning, I was, you know, sitting at my desk, almost ready to start school, and here comes Mama in the door, and she was mad. She was straight up mad. And she stood there in front of the room and told me, I hear you're going to fail my son because he's getting some F's. He's not doing that poorly. She had his report card in her shaking hands and shoulders. He's got one F here, but, you know, most of his grades aren't that bad. And I don't think you should be, I didn't actually say we were going to fail him. And, you know, all the students were in there enjoying this mentorship. And,
but since when are you the person she hasn't talked to? In my mind, yeah.
But the thing was, I talked to the school board about something that I should have talked to them first about. Mm-hmm. So yeah. Maybe it is a little bit different. But I did learn that try to go to the school board for problems they can help me with. And first, make sure I'm talking to the parents. So mm-hmm. If you're already talking to the parents about this scenario.
I would just say that you can live inside that box. I actually had a school board one year who told me that they're kind of tired of me sending homework home, mm-hmm. and they think I don't really need to do that this year. And I said, well, do you expect me to get through all the books? Yeah. I can tell you something that improved my teaching. Mm-hmm. It was a tiny box to run around in, and I had to run fast. But you can do it.
Yeah.
It can happen, and you're better off pleasing the parents and working with them than bucking the system.
Yeah.
And to the young lady back here who mentioned about throwing games, mm-hmm. this is just something about male psychology. We don't take the hint. Just if Johnny is being a rascally, rotten, lazy student, tell us that. Because if you do it the nice, ladylike way, we will leave feeling like you're a very nice person, and our son is a wonderful person too.
Okay.
Is that true?
Yeah, I think that's mostly true. We could go down this little interesting trail too. Did we answer your question at all? Sort of a little bit. Okay. So what about you have a case where you have a student who is struggling in school and PTA is coming up, and you think about this, and you know he's not getting his homework done, and he's a poor sport at recess. And he comes to school with a bad attitude. And everything I have to say about him or her is kind of negative. How do you go into PTA then? It's like, unload, let's fix this. So what do you do? Any of you ladies have any ideas? The ladies tend to be nicer, right? I'm not, maybe not, I don't know. Okay. How many of you are parents, by the way? Okay. Yeah, we're vastly outnumbered here. Did you know that parents are real people with feelings and they actually like their children? It's the little point you should remember at PTA. I've actually had, I know at least one lady who is gone home from PTA kind of annoyed because she thought that the teachers just don't like her children. Yeah. Some of those children were my wife's mother's grandchildren. So it is a good thing to understand that when you go in, no matter what the disability or problem or just orneriness or bad body odor or whatever that your students have, their parents probably love them and think they're wonderful. So it's just a good thing to understand, right? Although to Jonah's point about not taking us, not taking hints, there's some value to that too.
Just to your thing here, Faith Builders would teach the sandwich method. And that, that has been very helpful to me. The idea is that you say something nice, that's the top piece of bread. Mm-hmm. You get to the meat of what's really going on and you say, hey, you know, this is the problem. I'm really struggling with this and it hurts and it messes up my day and it's affecting all the rest of the students and everything. You just go ahead and tell them that. And then you finish off by saying, and like, oh, but you know, she really cares about her appearance. That's not something wonderful.
Yes.
And you end with something nice and it makes it a lot, I speak as a parent here, it does make it easier to take something.
Sure.
If we know that you at least love our child. Mm-hmm. And sometimes to a parent that means that you can see some good in them. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, shows really good posture in school, is extremely bossy, but also has good leadership skills. So there is always something positive that you can say. And it's not just politics, although politics, you know, that's kind of how we live life. We have to play politics a little bit, do politics a little bit. If you don't think you do, you should probably have somebody else look at your life a little bit more.
I'm not sure how this plays into it, but I think just going about with the idea of what you'd like to see, not just bashing for the negative you see, but I don't know, it, somehow that comes out. I think if you have a goal for what you would like to be able to help this child in, mm-hmm. versus just you can't stand this part of it and mm-hmm. talking about negatives, mm-hmm. somehow I think that attitude comes out that mm-hmm. you really see potential. And you're trying to get them to this higher potential.
That's very good. Maybe especially when you have a student that has been identified as having a disability, mm-hmm. right? So the student has, you know, you name it, this disability. It's very important that you as a teacher see that student, that child as a child, instead of a boy with autism, whatever, mm-hmm. whatever. So that the disability is not his identity. Think about it like this. Think about the worst thing you've ever done and people looking at you like that. That's who you are, mm-hmm. right? So make sure that we don't do that with our students.
I really like that. And one thing, just one experience that I've had that I'll share as a testimony. I have yet to see parents and a teacher working together on a goal, realistic goal for a child, and the child not reach that. Children are malleable. We can change them. Mm-hmm. And when the parents and the teacher are working together, it happens.
Mm-hmm. And celebrate those achievements too. Celebrate the small achievements. So if you can't think of how is a student progressing at all, look back mm-hmm. and see. Are they doing better in something? And notice that. Think about going into PTA. Also, just whatever they are, they've made progress. Celebrate that. I have to think about, I told the story about Ricardo. I remember having one really good week with him. It just went really well. The whole week went well. He was a good kid, good student, good child. Okay? And I went home and I told Uncle Tim, whom I was staying with, said, you know, he's been doing really well today. He said, you need to go tell His dad was, you go tell his dad right now. I'm sure. Got on my bike, rode out there, and I saw his dad coming home from work, and flagged him down, and his face kind of fell. Anyway, I told him, hey, I just want to tell you, he's did really well in his work this week. He just had a really good week. So, and he, after he, you know, I picked him up and gave him artificial respiration or whatever. He was extremely surprised. So that spoke a little bit to the way I had been teaching, I suppose. But it was actually a very helpful thing as we continued to work with him. Okay. Any other comments or questions?
Yeah, I'd just say that the communication, don't wait for parent teachers to meet for communication. There's one way, I think maybe it's ADHD or something, but we just keep, me and his man just text quite a bit, and just, you know, tell him about one really great class. Mm-hmm. And I think just it's great, it keeps the open communication so that when you do have something harder to say, it's not new to just talking back and forth.
Yeah. I would say that a text message is a great way to send a good message. It's not a great way to send a bad message.
Right.
Like, you should try to
talk
face to face. Yeah. Yeah. Just a couple points here quickly, too. And that is, organization is really important. And structure is just really important.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to even talk about it because Jonah and the novice track, you've been talking about that. But structure is much more important when you have students with any kind of disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
Surprises are not wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a shocking surprise to me to find out that I planned this nice surprise for my students, and I would just invariably have a bad time with them. And it happened to me over, I don't know how many years it took me to understand that there's some correlation here. I was a little bit of a slow learner myself here. So if you surprise them, it's that overstimulation thing goes into overdrive a little bit with them. So just understand that. Okay. Oh, I had another question that somebody probably has. What about dropping a class, a subject? Is that a good thing to do if they're just overloaded?
Absolutely.
It is a good thing? Okay.
I would, when doing that, I like to still have them come to class if I have a class. So that they still get to learn about geography, but they don't have the burden of doing the work.
Yeah. And maybe, especially in the case of the person who just can't get their homework done. And we didn't talk about whether you decided if it's, or you thought it was laziness, or like they just always have homework they're not getting done.
Yeah, there was some attitudes involved and kind of a solid, just almost lazy.
Yeah.
I don't really feel like it, kind of.
God bless you.
Yeah, that can be difficult.
Yeah.
What is the rule for homework that your really fast students should almost never have a homework, your B students should have homework once a week, and your C students are going to have homework most of the time or something like that on a normal workload?
Mm-hmm.
However, I did, I understand that Faith Builders, Kyle Leyland, was telling me that they are trying to go with a no homework policy completely. Which I blinked and swallowed just a little bit. It's impressive. So.
Shouldn't there be a small consequence for being lazy one day? Seems like...
If there's no hole, yeah. There's something.
If you can shove off your work, no big deal. It doesn't get done.
Seems like there should be a consequence.
Mm-hmm.
Any ideas?
Not my advisor. got it. It's not fair to the students to let them discover the clean sheet on the next day if they're not done the previous day.
Yeah.
Or he was more like, in real life, if you don't finish that task tonight, it's not going to finish overnight.
Yeah.
Be realistic to what life is like, mm-hmm. so it's his code.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, thank you for your thoughts and contributing, and God bless your classrooms this year.